When I was a child, I used to play hide and seek. I don't know if you played that when you were younger, did you? Some of you are nodding, some of you obviously had a lost youth, but that's okay. But anyway, it's a game where one hides and the other one seeks, right? But what happens if you hide too well? You know, we get fired. In fact, they sort of give up on actually looking for you. And so there's a little like play between hiding well enough to not be found right away, but hiding well enough that you can be found. I mean, kids, you know, the younger the kids are, they don't really hide very, like they hide behind a blade of grass. And it's like, oh, you can't see me. Oh, you found me. Oh. And they kind of play, but it's a game, right? I remember I used to play it and I would hide too well. And they would just give up looking for me. And I would go like, I'd stick my foot out, my hand, like, come on, like, I'm here. Are you guys giving up? Oh, yeah, we stopped playing that ages ago. So there is this toy between playing it well enough to enjoy it on both sides, right? So it's hide and seek is a game. Well, that's not what's happened in today's first reading. This is not hide and seek. Like, Adam and Eve are not trying to be found. And they are most definitely really hiding. Now, why do you think they're hiding? Shame. Well, yeah, it's guilt. Let's talk about shame in a second. They're guilty. They know they've done something wrong. And so they hear Jesus, they hear God coming and they make a run for it. Now, he didn't notice this whole dialogue is not, I mean, he asked where, but it's really like, why are you hiding? Like, as if I can't see you. Hello, I'm God. Huh? I mean, you can almost hear the pun in there, right? Like, why are you hiding again? Where? What do you think you're hiding from? I'm here. I see everything. And, of course, they come forward with the truth. We did something wrong. Now, part of what we hear in today's gospel and this reading, it's important to understand that's what's known as healthy guilt. When we do something wrong, we feel an internal guilt about having done it. I mean, any of us, no matter whether we're young or old, feel that, right? And in particular, kids, when we do something wrong, we know we've done it wrong. When mom or dad, hey, Brendan, did you take those cookies? What? Cookies. You know, of course, we know. Internally, we immediately know. That's healthy guilt, okay? Now, there is another thing called unhealthy guilt, which is called neurotic guilt. And this is what produces shame. And when shame comes around, there's no good that comes from shame. Because it does not allow, shame disables the truth. Because when one feels shame, one doesn't want to know the truth. When one feels guilty, in a healthy sense, then one wants to see the truth. It wants to come into the light, even though we know we're wrong, what we've done, we want to come into the light so that we can learn from it. Or if one is trying to help somebody learn, then one sheds the light on a situation in a healthy way, which they can then internalize it, learn from it, and not do it again. So that's the healthy guilt. But the unhealthy guilt is that which one, no matter, even though one has actually done the wrong, and we don't allow ourselves to be forgiven, or we don't allow ourselves to stay in the light, because we have this sort of neurotic thing that just keeps spinning. Now, it can happen for a multitude of reasons. Sometimes it just creeps in, and we just do silly things, and we repeat them. And we kind of get ourselves into a knot. Sometimes it can be result of wounds. Sometimes that has happened to us. Or sometimes it can be something that we do ourselves to ourselves. We've kind of built on a low self-esteem, things that. But sometimes the result of mental illness. And here's the thing about mental illness is it's mostly misunderstood. We never talk about this because the net outcome of a mental illness can be devastating. And in fact, we have two examples of it just this week. We have Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain. And we've had a number of same situations in our parish where people in the midst of their mental illness go to the furthest extreme, the darkest, and do something that makes absolutely no sense in suicide. Makes no sense whatsoever. But that's because they're in this fog of mental illness. Now, here's the extraordinary thing about any illness. If I had an open gash on my leg, what would you say? If you had an open gash, you saw me, what would you say? Oh my gosh, are you okay? First thing is a sharing of concern. Oh my gosh, are you okay? Right? That's the first thing. If you know me real well, then what would you say? Are you getting help? Do you need help? And if you really know me really, really closely, you're going to say, let's go. I'm going to help you. I'm bringing you in right now. That thing does not look right. You got to get help. Right? Those are the layers of we call them layers of intimacy. Now, here's the extraordinary thing about mental illness. That's any physical illness, any wound, anything physical. We would all do that. That's general. With mental illness, we have none of that. In fact, most of us are generally ignorant to the signs of mental illness. Now, mental illness goes all the way from sort of mild depression to all the way to multiple personality disorders and all sorts of disorders. There's a huge wide berth inside mental illness. But because we don't take any note of it, and this is sort of a unfortunate disdain of it in American society, we don't talk about it. But what ends up happening to extreme levels is what we've just witnessed in American society. Two well-known personalities take their lives. It makes no sense. Now, sometimes that could be because of mental illness. Sometimes it could be induced by some sort of substance abuse. There's lots. It's complex. But what we need to do is, here's the crazy thing about suicide, is it's contagious. And you think, no, that makes no sense. No, actually, that's exactly why. It makes no sense. But because suicide itself makes no sense. But for those who are in this fog of mental illness, it actually is an option, and it ought not to be. Why? Because they're in a fog of darkness, and they cannot see the light. They're in this neurotic guilt that it kills. It kills the personality, it kills the person. So what can we do? Well, first of all, we can educate ourselves. We must educate ourselves on the different levels and different things that happen in this wide continuum of mental illness. And then what we have to do is exactly what God does in today's first reading. What does he do? He simply asks questions. Why are you hiding? Honey, why are you hiding in the darkness of your room all day? Why are you there and not having any friends? Why ask questions is what God does. He doesn't tell them, hey, you're sinful, you're going to hell. He doesn't say any of that. He just simply asks questions. Why are you hiding? And there's sort of this premise, like, as if, why are you hiding? I can see you. I'm here. I've always been here. And I will always be here. And once they answer the questions, the darkness breaks. And the light shines in. And that's all somebody needs. Now look, sometimes they really do need mental health professional. They really do need to attend to somebody. But they won't even do that unless somebody sees what pain they're going through. That we reach in and we shine a ray of light in the midst of their terrible dark days. And what we do when we say that, when we ask questions and care, it's like what we do when we see a person with an open wound. Are you okay? Can I help? Can I get you help? Those are the levels we have to, most especially now. Why? Because of this darn contagion that has now taken a hold of our society. We need to care. And we need to take note and look around us of those who are closest to us and ask questions. Gently, lovingly ask questions. But in all of this, what we need to make sure we do is to tell our loved ones that we love them. And that in the midst of their darkness, that we love them. And it is like the reading from the second letter of Paul to the Corinthians, is that the context of life, in the midst of suffering and pain, that the Lord in the resurrection is our ultimate promise. And that we, by our love and by our care, we are attempting to break into their darkness and shine that ray of the Lord's resurrection in their life. It is critical. It is critical in these weeks ahead that we keep our eyes open for those around us and to love them in the midst of their darkness and encourage them, if necessary, to get extra help. But we have that choice. Why? Because God tells us always He's here. I always have been, and I always will be. Nothing can hold Him back. Even our darkest day, He is there. You and I need to be part of that light in the people's darkness.